Good afternoon, neighbors. Last Tuesday, citizens of the United States went to the polls in record-breaking numbers. This was truly a great demonstration of good citizenship. Yet, now that the election is over, many of the problems that have faced us in the years past are still with us. This week, the 18th Biennial Congress of the Cooperative League met in Chicago. One of the speakers was Frank McCullough, Secretary to Senator Paul H. Douglas. Mr. McCullough talked on cooperatives and the need for better citizenship. After his talk, a group of us gathered with Mr. McCullough and discussed his talk and some of the issues which it raised. These people were Breen Melvin of Ottawa, who is with the Cooperative Union, Ed Whitney, Educational Director of Consumers Cooperative Wholesale and Superior, and Glenn Thompson, Director of Public Relations for Midland Cooperative in the Twin Cities. Mr. McCullough, what are some of the things that cooperatives need to do and can do to bring about better citizenship?
It seems to me first that we need to try to survey the needs and the problems that lie before us, lest we get too confident that an overwhelming victory in the election last Tuesday solved everything. And so I would feel that cooperatives and their members ought to survey the range of problems in the international field and in the domestic field and see whether or not our program for the unity and the strength of the free world, our program for the enlargement of economic opportunity at home, for civil rights and the like, has been advanced or retarded by these election results.
Well, now, Breen Melvin is a Canadian, and looking in from the outside, what's your impression of these kinds of elections we've just gone through in this country?
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's a kind of election program that's much more vocal, much larger than what we are used to at home. One of the questions that we have in our minds at the moment, particularly, has to do with the relationships between government and cooperatives. And I may say that we're wondering what will happen, whether there will be any change in the attitude toward cooperatives from here on in your country.
Frank?
Isn't it important to acknowledge that in the statements that have been made, both candidates for the presidency gave assurances to the cooperative movement that their units would be encouraged? I think General Eisenhower, in one of his speeches in Minnesota, gave a fairly frank and forthright statement on this. My fear at this point, however, would be balancing the strong words that the general gave about the cooperative movement, that there might be elements both within his own party and perhaps within our party, the Democratic Party, which wouldn't see it the same way as he does.
All right, let's call Glenn Thompson in as a person who lives in Minnesota. What's your impression up there, Glenn?
We recognize that both General Eisenhower and Governor Stevenson chose Minnesota as the place where they came forth with their views of what their administrations would take toward the cooperative development of the United States. I think both of the candidates were genuine in their statements. I think they were perfectly sincere, but our people in Minnesota are concerned to the point not so much what the candidate for the president had to say about what the party position would be were elected to office, but we're very definitely interested, for instance, who will be the Secretary of the Treasury that will be nominated by General Eisenhower, and what will the Secretary of the Treasury do in interpreting certain tax rules? What will the House Ways and Means Committee do in terms of drafting any new tax legislation? How will that tax be applied to cooperative enterprise? The thing that we're concerned about is that people as a whole do not sit back and feel comfortable now that the election is over and say that the government is going to do it properly.
All right, Ed Whitney, what's the feeling up in Wisconsin?
Well, I've talked to some of our folks up there about this election, and one thing that came up that I'd like to ask as a question from McCullough is this. Some of our folks have heard about this idea that you can now analyze political trends in advance, or in other words, what people are thinking about. And then you can actually plan a political campaign on the basis of people's attitudes if you have enough money and enough research, in other words, and enough people to do it. And there, and that gives them a rather negative feeling that there isn't any hope for small people, so to speak, to beat that type of a thing. And I just wanted to ask you what would be your comment on that.
I know this is one of the very real problems, and one of the election analyses printed by the New York Times, written by Cabo Phillips, the editor of their Sunday magazine section, he stressed the fact that the slick techniques that have been used in the election may be a way of getting much good information to the people, but as you've just pointed out, Ed, they may also be a way of misleading the people if they get into the hands of the folks who want to work for a narrow private interest. I think we need to be aware of that and help people to see through what, for instance, the National Tax Equality Association may propose. Look to the real heart of the proposal that patronage refunds be taxed as income, which, of course, the National Tax Equality Association would want the government to do. I don't know of any long-range way of counteracting those slick techniques except our own responsible use of all of the avenues of education and publicity and approach to the people to try to get the facts to them, and to be aware of the danger that others are using these techniques in the interest of a narrow interest is very important.
Well, let's take radio and television as an example. I wonder, Breen Melvin, if we couldn't learn something from you people in Canada. Maybe we're going to have to come to a place where television time is allocated to all the parties on an equal basis, and it isn't a matter of who can raise the biggest war chest.
That's the way we've been trying to handle it up there so far. Of course, television is still very small in its development in Canada, but with radio through the CBC, each party is allotted a certain amount of time all through the year, and then particularly before particular elections. Television will be developed under the control of government as advocated at present. There are influences and interests who are very strongly opposed to that sort of development, but we feel that through Farm Radio Forum and other people's programs of that type, we can have an influence, the cooperative people, the trade union people, and others of that sort can have an influence and keep radio and television as a public instrument to be used in the interest of all the folk.
Mm-hmm. Frank?
Haven't our own decisions of the Federal Communications Commission recently made available in our country too some of these channels to educational and other types of institutions, so that if we can help in the financing of those efforts so that they won't lose these opportunities of getting factual data and fair analyses out to the people, so that they won't be afraid to use these channels for controversial subjects because somebody is going to call them a name or infer that they have some subversive intent because they challenge the position of some Republican congressman. If we can maintain both their financing and their freedom, then it may be that we too, even without public control or public ownership of one of the channels, can help the private institutions that own these channels to do a good job of balancing up the educational efforts of the other side.
Yes, but Frank, in this day and age of fears, isn't there going to be less of a tendency for educational institutions, for instance, to stick their necks out and to get into controversial issues, or even make their facilities available for the expression of controversial views?
Well, I certainly fear that. And the results of the election, the fact that some of the intolerant kind of campaigning was not thoroughly repudiated by the leaders of one of the parties, is a real danger signal for us. Now, I am confident that our next president, General Eisenhower, will not cherish that type of spreading of fear, of guilt by accusation. But we must be aware of the danger and help him to help those groups in the community who want to exercise academic freedom to do so without being intimidated.
I must say, at Whitney down in Ohio, we have watched with a little fear some of the tactics being used by your junior senator from Wisconsin, Senator McCarthy.
Well, that's certainly true, and I imagine that if we were to go anywhere in the United States, we would get that type of comment. And I might mention that last summer I happened to be in California, and the first reception I had up there from some very fine people was the very comment you bring out. Well, you're from Wisconsin. What are you folks doing about McCarthy? It's the first question they asked. But I had another comment, Glenn, with mutual interest in Wisconsin of our cooperatives there. Now, is there any progress being made on this idea of getting these free channels, for instance, for television, signed up so that we can make some use of that those facilities in behalf of the people? Now, I found very little response, actually, among some of our groups from a viewpoint of citizenship.
Well, I think
get those tied up, and you commented on that earlier.
I think we have to make a distinction here between employing radio and television for a straight propaganda purpose, as against that where the greatest good will come where it's properly employed for educational programs of all types.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we are consciously aware of the social hysteria that people like Senator McCarthy have raised by their implications of things being as they would like for them to be when it isn't founded on fact. I believe in the long run, all of our cooperative people have to recognize that educational TV can be a very important item in educating the people as a whole. I think we're going to have to follow a pattern that has been outlined to us, that we're going to have to join hands with our state universities and in some places like in the Milwaukee public school system, and encourage the local legislators to appropriate the necessary funds to maintain the state-owned educational agencies like Educational TV. I know our University of Minnesota is coming up with a proposal, and this president of the University of Minnesota, Dr. Morrow, who used to be from Ohio, is going to call a statewide meeting to enlist the interest, the participation, and the support of all groups in the community. And I think there is a place, Mr. McCullough, where we can come back to those of you who are serving in government to get assistance and direction how to employ those resources most advantageously.
Yes, let's expand this beyond the use of the media, television, radio, and the press. Mr. McCullough, do you think that we as people who belong to cooperatives ought to take an active part in better citizenship campaigns, or is it more our duty to just serve, say, the interests of farmers or consumers in getting better prices or selling their goods at a higher price?
Well, that, of course, is kind of a set-up question for me, and my obvious answer is that we've got to do both things. If we concern ourselves only with our own immediate and narrow economic interests, then those who would make the decisions of our national policy such that they would run counter to our interest may prevail. It's very possible that we can nurse our consumer cooperative, we can nurse our marketing cooperative, maybe fight the legislative fight to keep unfair tax legislation from coming onto those cooperatives, and let the future be cut out from under us on basic questions of foreign policy, the protection of democratic rights, and the regulation of concentrations of economic power. And if we do that, then the future for democracy will not be bright. Now, I don't assume that you or any of the other cooperators would knowingly do that. It's only if we get caught asleep. And I know the Farm Bureau Federation and many of the wonderful discussion programs you've had through the years in Ohio have helped your own members to be awake, yes, to those things that affect their immediate interests, but also to the needs of neighbors a little farther away from them, some of them in the big cities, some of them in countries that are farther away, because we free people will either hang separately or survive together. And on national issues and international issues, I think we need your help.
Yet there are a surprisingly large number of people, and I think many people who think of themselves as good cooperators, who say, stay out of politics, just mind your economic business.
Isn't there a danger that if we, as cooperators, don't continue to exercise not only our rights, but to discharge our responsibilities, we're going to forfeit the right to speak, possibly at a future time when we feel we have something to say? We can't very well withdraw into our own shell, as it were, and take care of our own house only for a while and then expect to be listened to at a future date when we may have something quite valuable to contribute. In other words, we must be at the job continuously, or else we've practically abandoned the post.
Well, let's take England, for example. As I understand it there, the Cooperative Party has taken, there is a Cooperative Party, and it's taken a very active part in politics. Are you saying that we in the United States should become that actively identified with a political party or parties?
Hardly, no, but I do feel that we must do everything possible to keep our people actively interested politically in the parties of their particular choice. And our job, as Mr. McCullough said earlier, is that of getting facts before people and relying on them to make the decisions.
Glenn?
I'd like to throw out this other challenge, Mr. Wheeling, that the people are predisposed to get very much interested in governmental affairs, get very much concerned about politics 90 days before the election. I think it's mandatory that cooperators look at the whole problem of politics and political participation very honestly, very realistically, and the parties too probably should plan a program of fundamental education and political participation. This thing we talk about politics, and it's to be treated as a bad word in cooperative circles, that's just pure hokum. We're members of a great cooperative institution, and that's government. We've got to make that government function far more advantageously in the interest of the people than what we have done heretofore. What do you think of that, Mr. McCullough?
Well, of course, I say amen to that. You've learned in your own cooperative movement how important it is to have membership participation. It's one of your cardinal points of organization. And I think we need to have citizens generally adopt that same principle, and the cooperators can help citizens generally to increase their informed participation in these political decisions. And if cooperators are to be a movement, and I know they think of the cooperative movement as a movement, they can't have their vision or their activity narrowly centered only upon themselves. They are aware, as I've seen in the part of many of your leaders, of the interests of humanity generally, of the other elements in the community that go beyond them, because they realize that anything to be a movement must be concerned about the freedom and the welfare and the opportunity of all people. That's one of the reasons the cooperative movement has so much of my admiration and much of my support as well. And I hope that you'll do that in the civic life of your communities and in the national life of our country.
Well, I thought that the subject matter that McCullough brought out in his talk this afternoon was excellent, where he pointed out very specific things that he thought we as cooperators could do. And I was going to make this observation that I've noticed in some of our communities back home in Minnesota, where, for instance, a cooperative man is a town chairman, or in, for instance, a couple counties, he's the chairman of the county. In fact, he doesn't come to, or he has our board meeting changed so he can carry on that responsibility. And I've noticed that there's a great deal of respect wherever cooperative people are carrying on those activities. And I wonder if we shouldn't stress that more in some of our own educational and information programs in our own groups.
I think it's certainly good public relations if those of us who are interested in cooperatives do take an active part in citizenship activities. Of course, people are many different things in terms of the organizations they belong to.
Well, I think there are places besides those that we've covered quickly here this afternoon. We're having an experience of introducing a series of adult group discussions in our church, where we're discussing the St. Lawrence Seaway. We're discussing the Missouri Valley Authority. We're discussing the hydroelectric power potential in the Missouri Valley if it's properly developed. We think that all these activities are going to not only enhance the economic well-being of our people, but in order to get them, they're going to have certain basic information about them in order to reflect that particular interest to their respective congressmen and their senators, who will have to appropriate the funds for these public developments.
And you're willing to use the time and efforts of Midland Cooperative to see that something like the St. Lawrence Waterway is developed?
Well, we even had, Maury, we had that topic discussed at our annual meeting with one of the representatives of the St. Lawrence Waterway Association to indicate to us what it means in terms of increased income for our wheat producers who can short-circuit some of the excessive costs of transportation to getting their wheat to the market. What does it mean in terms of the purchase of finished product coming out of the eastern states? We know that we've got to have more competition, and maybe it's through these devices that we can get more competition back into the economy so that all people will benefit, whether they're cooperative members or not.
Green?
It surely is pretty evident that the time has passed, if it ever existed, when cooperatives can think they can live in a sort of vacuum all their own. We live in a community that's made up of a number of different forces, and surely to goodness we're tremendously affected and interested in what these different forces do. And the matter of the St. Lawrence Seaway is brought up.
Of course, we don't have to worry about that anymore because you're going to build it in Canada, aren't you?
Well, we're working on it. That's right. They tell us they're going to start on it pretty soon. But we do feel that it would be very much better if it were a joint project and we're both working on it together. I'm sure it could be worked out much better if that were the case.
Well, isn't that another evidence, Mr. Breen, that we are trying to set the pattern, we're trying to set the pace for collaboration between the people of the United States and the people of our great sister nation to the north in Canada. And yet we find obstructionist interests in Congress who have voted insistently and persistently against the St. Lawrence Waterway Association. And maybe we should, in our respective communities, sit down and analyze and find out which of our senators, which of our representatives have opposed the St. Lawrence Seaway. Because how can we make some of these grandiose schemes in the United Nations work if we can't work together as sister nations, United States and Canada?
Of course, when you go that far, don't people say, well, you're getting your cooperative organization into partisan politics, don't they?
No, I don't think that's partisan at all. I think that's just good citizenship.
Ed Whitney?
Moritz, I'd like to just comment on that because St. Lawrence has been mentioned, and coming from Superior, that comes right close to our backyard. And while our Central Cooperative Wholesale has maintained a very, very much of a policy that we don't want to get into anything which is political, nevertheless, traditionally, our annual meetings have resoluted on the St. Lawrence Waterway, for instance, for one thing, and tried to be helpful in that, as well as other things which one could say are in the public interest. In other words, that's where they've tried to draw the line.
Well, you say politically, you're drawing the line between getting into an issue that is either, say, a strictly party issue, a Republican issue, or a Democratic issue.
Right.
But over and above that, anything that you think affects the cooperative, you do take up and do discuss.
And public interest, even if it doesn't have a direct relationship to the cooperative, if after thinking of it, it seems that it's in the public interest, above the interests of either party, but in behalf of the people, that type of public issues, our group seems to feel ought to be considered.
If you feel very strongly that such an issue as this is a national issue in the welfare of the people, surely to goodness there's nothing to do but to take some action that will help people to make the right decision. And I'd be very surprised that if certain influences are an obstruction to the carrying out of national policy, I'd be surprised if your cooperatives here weren't prepared to do something to help remove that obstruction or to lower it or to reduce the influence of it, because in building your cooperatives themselves, when you've come across some problem that stood in the way, I know you've not been reluctant to find the way around or to find the best road to the objective which you had in mind. Surely you're not going to back away from this kind of problem.
Well, I think we even have to go farther and even call the roll. If we have an outstanding senator who is accepting $40,000 or $50,000 from the railroads, presumably to be retained by that railroad to buy his vote against the St. Lawrence Waterway Association, I think that senator should be identified. I don't care whether he comes from Minnesota, Wisconsin, or Ohio. I think that he has to be identified.
You mean to clip his neck off?
I wouldn't say clip his neck off. I think we should tell the truth and let the people decide on the basis of the facts.
Well, what do you do, Glenn, when you carried on a campaign of education and then decisions go against you? How persistent should we be as cooperators in trying to stand up for the causes we believe in?
Well, historically, right is right, whether it's defeated in 1952 or in 1948. I think we have the responsibility, if we're going to be forthright and honest and have a degree of general integrity about the cooperative movement, that the record stands. Unless that gentleman changes his vote, we've still got to tell his constituents and our members how that representative or senator votes on these basic issues. I see no other choice.
I think it's possibly a matter of degrees, too, depending on the issues. I'm thinking of this question of tax, this tax fight, for instance. Now, there is an issue which is so basic that it just seems that we can't let up on that at all. There may be other issues that could be called perhaps less important or significant, and we may not put the same amount of effort there.
Well, Ed, I'm finding a lot of people who say, well, the election was over Tuesday, let's wait now for another 2 years or 4 years before we do anything about it. Do you have any advice to offer there?
Well, I have a very definite feeling on that, and that's simply this, that one of the real tragedies, it seems to be, is the fact that we go to sleep, as was pointed out by others and by Frank McCullough this afternoon, that in between elections we do go to sleep, and I think that goes for all groups. I'm not speaking just of cooperative groups. I've observed the same thing in farm groups, labor groups, and many other groups. And then we get a hot program just a little bit before election, and I don't think that until we reach the political maturity that we feel the need, you know, for our year-round program, are we going to make headway on that?
Are things any different in Canada, Breen, Melbourne?
Not too much, Morris, because next year it looks as though we're going to have an election up there, and I wouldn't want anybody to feel that I sort of sat in here to somebody from the outside pontificating, but rather that there's a lot here that I'm going to take home, and we're going to think about at home, too.
Yes, well, we might point out to our listeners that the cooperative movement certainly is very well developed in Canada. This week, the 18th Biennial Congress, the Cooperative League, met in Chicago, and you've been listening to a program, participants of which were Frank McCullough, who is Secretary to Senator Paul H. Douglas from Illinois. You probably remember that Mr. Douglas spoke at our Farm Bureau Annual Meeting several years ago. Breen Melvin, Ottawa, with the Canadian Cooperative Union. Ed Whitney, Educational Director of Consumers Cooperative Wholesale at Superior. And Glenn Thompson, Director of Public Relations for Midland Cooperative in Minneapolis. This is Morris Wheating, Director of Education for the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation.